Dumpster Divas, welcome to another episode of Dumpster Dive with me, Tom Hamlet, and my sister,
Kix Hamlet. We are here to dive into the reality TV that made us, well, the garbage we are.
I know, that's right. And expect like a mix of throwback recaps as well as chats about what we are still watching today.
Tom, are you ready to get into it?
Let's go. Hi, everyone. We are back. Here on the heels on the aftermath of an explosive end to Salt Lake City. And, you know, I needed to touch down with, I think of him as one of the ultimate kind of like Bravo encyclopedias. And that is Gibson of Gabbing with Gib and Gibson Johns on Instagram. I mean, Gibson Noma on Instagram. Gibson, welcome back to the pod. It's been a second. I can't wait to get into all this with you. How's it going?
I know, it has been a second. I'm very happy to be back. Thank you for that very nice intro.
Of course.
No, it's quite the week. I mean, I kind of like with each part, with the finale and each part of the reunion, I was kind of like, okay, I think I've like gotten all my thoughts out there. Okay, like I'm kind of done talking about this. But then, you know, especially with this part three, like I have so many thoughts. I really, it was quite the finish.
Yeah, I almost think that they should have like, you should have watched it in like 75 millimeter IMAX Oppenheimer style, like all of it in one piece, because like the third part is so integral to the way the whole story pans out. Because I was talking with some friends from college that we have like our Bravo thread.
Right.
And seeing everyone's reactions after part one versus part three, based on them liking or disliking Monica, has kind of transformed. In the beginning of the reunion, I said from the start, I was like, this is it's done.
Yeah, it was the energy she brought into the reunion was completely ill-advised. I don't even know if anybody was advising her, but like if she had any chance of coming back to the show, she had to come in with some sort of kind of tail between her legs, not completely, but at least like kind of being open to conversing with them and maybe apologizing for something. But she just came in so hot. She is full of low blows. And I mean, Lisa Barlow was right when she said that she's hard to argue with. She's bad at arguing, because how do you argue with somebody just like calling you an ugly bitch? You know what I mean? Like, what do you respond to that?
Well, that's Rich also coming from Lisa, who's not particularly good with her words at arguing either, I don't think.
I wouldn't say that Lisa's as quick as some of the rest of them, but she was talking about just how low Monica goes. And it's like,
totally.
I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, Lisa isn't necessarily the quickest on her feet in those scenarios, but like, at least she doesn't, at least whatever she ends up saying, like there is a response you can make to what she says usually.
Yes. Yes, completely. And you know, Monica feels to me like a kid. She comes across like a teenager who got in trouble for doing something they weren't supposed to do, like sneaking out of the house and going to a party, right? But
yeah,
they're dying on the sword that the party was the best night of their life. So like, don't be upset about like let me live, and also like, can we just move on?
Yeah,
it's like,
I
well,
know.
You did break a rule, so like, we should reprimand you for breaking a rule. And are you sorry? And she's like, not really.
Right.
Like, it's just, it's very childish the way she's coming at this. She could have, I think she could still be on the show if she had come to the reunion with a different point of view.
Yeah, I think at the end when Andy asked them, like, is there anything Monica could say? Is there anything? And at that point, when they're 12 hours into the day and she's been yelling at them all day and she's refused to apologize about anything, at that point, yeah, there was nothing else she could say. But again, I think if he had asked that question at the top, the answers would have been a little bit less emphatic, you know, like they're all just like, no, like there's no way. I think if he'd asked that in the first hour, the reactions wouldn't have been as severe. And again, I just think that she did herself a disservice by the way that she came in. And I think that that's, you know, I think a lot of people kind of commend her for, you know, that she's like kind of savvy and she like, you know, she's studied the show and all these things, but it's like, if she's unable to like think more than one step ahead. She's very she goes with her gut a lot. She's very like instinctual. She just like kind of says things without thinking. But part of playing this game, which is a game that she is playing, is thinking ahead and seeing that, like, okay, I have this 10-hour reunion taping to try to solidify any chance of coming back for season five. And she wasn't thinking like that. But I think that if she were savvier, if she were, I don't know, like, she's a good housewife, but I don't know. It just she couldn't set herself up for success in the long run. It was all so short term and thinking one step ahead.
And I think she's in, there's a class of housewives, and I don't have a good example of others, but we could probably brainstorm to get there, who are better like on set in the filming of the show than they are at a reunion. And then there are some that are the opposite, who like don't contribute and then at a reunion have everything to bring to the table. And she needed a little bit more of the reunion for her, for the way she behaved on the season. She needed to bring a little bit more to the reunion stage, because I would watch her just walk around Salt Lake City trying to get into a better place with her mom, trying to get into a better place with these ladies. Like, I see the potential for the show, like in the season, in it playing out on a season, but at the reunion, she just brings nothing, and she's not willing. I'm trying to think, who's another example of this? Like,
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's hard. It's kind of, she's in the same class as like a Brandi Glanville or like a Kelly Dodd, but I think that even they knew when to like rein it in a little bit. They knew they had a cup, like Monica to me has one speed, at least at the reunion, she's had one speed, and they were able to sometimes give us different speeds, you know, like they were able to change it up enough where, like, yeah, they would lash out and they would have these moments where they like would go low and they would just kind of burst out. But then they would occasionally know how to listen, I guess. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's giving them too much credit, but like that to me is sort of the category of housewife that she's in.
yeah, I agree. And you know what? I encourage her not to hold her head too low, because being a one season imprint that was so impactful is pretty iconic.
Oh, so iconic. I mean, you know, I think you could count on one hand that the amount of
Yeah,
women
she's
who have been on a
completely.
show for one season and changed the game this much. I mean, she should, in some ways, she should be proud of herself. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's going to forget the name Monica Garcia. And, you know, as they've said, like, it's not a completely closed door, but I think she has to, sh she still has yet to show a willingness to apologize. And she said that, like, be that's because she just like didn't want it to be a fake apology. But again, I just think that's her like not willing to like fully play the housewives game. You know, there are plenty of times when like housewives will apologize without sort of meaning it, but they do it because they know they need to move forward, they need to resolve some conflict, and that's just part of the gig, and she doesn't understand that yet.
No, she doesn't. She's a very, like you were talking about, thinking about the long game. She lives in this like present moment where she's like, she doesn't live in the past or the future. She's living constantly in now. And so she's like, well, right now you're hurting my feelings. And it's like, but she doesn't think about why someone could be mad at her. She's like, but this doesn't feel good right now, which is like a childish mindset to live in.
It totally is.
And she, you know, my heart breaks for her though too, because like when you are the daughter of a grifter, I mean, it's hard not to grift, you know?
I think on Watch Happens Live, Joel Kim Booster was like, you know, I'm really glad that we saw all the stuff with Monica and her mom first, because it does explain the way that she is. And that's totally true. Like, it's like she's not necessarily, she wasn't really given the tools of success to succeed from the way that she was raised. And like she's still contending with that in her relationship with her mother. But yeah, listen, I thought that whole aspect of her time on the show was extremely compelling. It was great TV. It was interesting. It was like unique. And again, I do think it explains the way that she is. But again, she's an adult, and so she has to learn to evolve past that, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, her mom
Well,
is.
and not only adult, she's also a mother of how many? Four or something like that?
Yeah, I think four. I only
Which is
remember seeing like two of
crazy.
them, but like, yeah, I think it was,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, at the top of the reunion, we had our kind of final thoughts with Mary, and Mary just was continuing to deliver one-liners. Where are you at with her in this season, and what's like up next for her, do you think?
I'm glad that she sort of circled back, like did those pickup scenes, showed up to the reunion. Like she seems a little bit more engaged, because I think that she saw that, you know, the way that she was acting in that first half of the season where she was like uninterested in engaging and really pulled back. I think that she kind of overplayed her hand and she recognized that. So I actually thought that she was pretty engaged in this reunion. I don't, you know, I obviously don't buy her claim that she wasn't body shaming Heather about that corset. I don't.
Yeah, well, she body shames constantly too. Like she shamed Monica during the season. It was like, you love food too much. Like,
right. It's like, that's just kind of, I guess that's just kind of how she sees the world. But I think that she's totally worth keeping around. She's such, as Andy said, she's amazing comedic relief. And this show, I think, sometimes needs that, because they can get really serious and kind of bogged down with some of these big scandals. And, you know, I think I saw some people sort of mad that she was pulled out before the talk about Reality Von Teese and Bermuda, but it's like, she wasn't on that trip. So,
oh really? What would she wouldn't have contributed? Anything.
No, that's what,
like,
I'm saying.
I don't know why people would be confused.
I totally agree. Yeah, she, it's like she clearly was coming into the reunion with an agenda to defend Monica, regardless of what was being said or what was being argued. So yes. I think it's great that she kind of came in. She had a pretty good second part. You know, we got a little bit from her at the beginning of this third part, and then we're saying bye to her for the rest of the taping. But the one comment that I actually thought was really interesting that I would love for them to explore next season a little bit, maybe, is, you know, when Whitney was saying, you know, I'm kind of scared about how you react to me, so that's why I act around you like this on camera. And then Mary was like, Meredith, are you scared of me? And Meredith was like, no. And actually, you and I have had words off camera and we will hash it out and resolve it. But we've never seen anything like that between them on camera. Like they've always been perfectly cordial on camera. Like kind of, it's kind of an alliance. And I would love to see what an argument between Mary and Meredith looks like and see how they would resolve that. Like, I think that's fascinating to me.
Agreed. And I wonder, I mean, it had to have been about the show.
Sure, I'm right? Sure it was. Yeah, but I would again, yeah, like they're down to, you know, tear down the fourth wall a little bit on this show. So show us that, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think they have much to talk about, the two of them, besides the show that they're on together. So I just can't imagine what else it would be about if it's not like,
yeah, that's a good
you
point.
Said something about me in a confessional or your Instagram or your social media. Like, I don't know.
It's, right, but like
that's
to me,
like what
to
Housewives
me,
talk about.
Yeah, Salt Lake City though to me is the postmodern Housewives. So like,
sure,
let us hear it.
Yeah, completely. I also loved when they showed the clip package of Lisa having a mental breakdown about doing drag.
Oh my God.
Which I think we could have spent a little more time on that, because it was crazy. We really skirted over how she's so frightened of just like looking any different than she does every day. And while the clip is playing, they cut to Mary. You know how they have them like in the bottom corner? They got to Mary and she goes, this is not good, Lisa. I'm like, I think this is the first time that Mary's seen this.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about it, and Mary shoots these like truths out of her sometimes that are very, you're like, oh wait, you just said something that's like, you just cut to someone's core. And when she said to Lisa that, you know, that's insecurity, right? That you have to get glam every day of your life, like that was like hit Lisa inside of her heart. She's like, oh my God, she found me out.
That was wild. And it's also just like, but it's also rich coming from Mary, who like just does care so much about appearances, you know. So it's sort of like you're right, she will say, I mean, she has kind of the same thing of Monica we just talked about, of like, she just says whatever's on her mind, you know, which I guess good for her. I like that she's a truth teller, but sometimes she could use a little bit more like of a softer touch, I would say.
Oh, 1,000%. But no, I agree. I think that she needs to be back next season in some form, and just to bring, you know, energy and quips and crazy reads on people's fashions and things like that. And honestly, I thought she looked stunning in that blue.
She looked amazing. Yeah. And I think one of the keys with this cast, you know, first it was Jen Shaw and Mary, then it was Monica and Mary. this cast needs somebody who's an enigma, a big personality, somebody who they don't quite know how to deal with or act around. That's kind of how this show has worked for that throughout the first four seasons. So, you know, I think that she also serves that. She kind of fills that role as well.
Yeah. And for those who are worried that, like, what if Monica's gone, how are we going to move on? Like, Salt Lake City seems to be a place stocked full of people who are cuckoo, banunu. So I'm positive we're able to find someone else who's involved in a cult that we can, like, throw on the,
you know, oh my god, like, no, I have no, like, I have no worry about that. Like, I mean, they Heather already was alluding on Watch What Happens Live, like, to the like new women, basically. She, like, kind of, like, said that. So it's like they must have, like, people in their pocket that would jump into the show at a moment's notice. So I'm not worried about that aspect of it. I think that people are being dramatic when it comes to that.
Right. Like, you either were or are in an MLM, were or are in a cult, or run a beauty salon. Like, it's like those are your three options in Salt Lake City.
That's iconic.
Like, everyone on that stage falls under one of those things.
Listen. Oh my God. Such a wild place.
So also, I thought, okay, so Lisa in this episode, something else that was kind of jumping out to me is her rampant narcissism. So first, because she is actually genius at how she can make something like an attack on her. Like, I don't know if you, did you catch how crazy the logic was that she was like, the reason that Monica knew that I went on a plane with Snoop Dogg was because she hacked Jen Shaw's cameras to watch me and Jen talk about it. Like, I'm like, that is a crazy, crazy far-fetched, like, A to Z to get to involve yourself. And it's like, you just wanted to bring up the fact that she had access to her cameras, I think. But it's crazy how she can insert herself into that situation, I think.
She definitely lobs that up. I think that, like, I see it both ways. I do think that it was definitely partly just an excuse to bring up the fact that she had access to Jen's cameras that she had been asked to set up in her house. And Monica did sort of imply that she had access to listen to them, which to me implies that she did listen in on them.
Totally. She definitely did.
But I mean, I don't know. I agree that maybe Jen just did tell Monica about that story, but you know, if you're Lisa, you know, they played that clip from that time when Monica brought up the Snoop Dogg thing, and you could see Lisa clock it in the moment of like, wait, I never told Monica this, you know, like,
yeah,
like
that's she, true, I guess.
So it's like, whether it came from Jen or via the security cameras, I don't think we'll ever know that, the answer to that. I mean, it's, you take Monica's word or Lisa's theory, but if you are Lisa, it's sort of like, wait, how the fuck does she know this? You know what I mean? Like, it's clearly a story that she hasn't told that many people. So I don't know. I agree that, like, it was probably, it was just used to kind of, again, just share another element of, like, Monica's kind of creepy behavior about them. But if you're Lisa, you're like, wait, I didn't tell Monica this story. How the fuck does she know this? I don't know. I'd be creeped out.
I do see that. Yes, I agree. It would creep me out as well. But I don't know. I just, because there was also another moment in the end where Monica was like, you know, I have empathy for, she said something about like how she has empathy for Heather and like Angie or something like that and Whitney. And then, and Lisa's like, what about me?
Yeah, that was, Andy was like, let her say it.
Yes, she's like, just, it's not about you in this moment. She's just trying to get to a point. I was like, oh my
god. No, I get it. I totally get what
you're always
saying.
Like, and okay, to also at the end of me just bitching on her, I love her. Like, I think she's perfect for the show. I just sometimes I'm like, Lisa, it's not always an attack on you. Like, I feel like she's always on the defensive.
She is always on the defensive, but that's kind of why, that's kind of like an element of like her campiness. And like,
sure,
I think she fills this role of, I think now she's a little bit more self-aware of like playing that character a little bit. But to me, she still fills this like archetype of a housewife that I love, which is like, you know, a little bit kind of a lot unself-aware, but also self-aware. And like, you know, she, when she initially came on the show, she didn't really understand exactly how she was coming off, you know, and now she plays into it. So I think it's hard to tell exactly like when she's being unself-aware, when she's like trying to play the character. But I don't know. I just like, there's something about her, whatever she's doing, it's just sort of like, you know, I love her. Like she's made for this. And I appreciate that about her.
She is made for it. And she's had her eyes set on this for so long.
Totally.
She's been pitching shows, being like, I need a show in Salt Lake City with the ladies. And she got right, she's got a good show on her hands. So
right, which to me, like, you know, I think it was Andy who said this, which is like, you know, the Monica scheming to get on the show is not a crime. And like, it's the way that she did it was obviously different and questionable. And
yeah, you know, women do that all the time on every
right,
franchise.
But like, yeah, exactly. Like, how do you think women get on the show? They all want to be on it. So that was sort of a moot point, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk a little bit more about Reality Von Teese, I guess, and Monica. Something that jumped out to me during the finale that is like kind of freaks me out about Monica and showed itself here in like our final thoughts on Reality Von Teese was the way that she lies about little things that don't necessarily matter. Like she fabricates yes. so much that doesn't need to be fabricated.
Totally agree.
So the first instance was when she lied about ever going into Meredith's store, which mm-hmm. I have pointed out was so eerie and weird because that's just something that just doesn't need to be lied about. Like mm-hmm. you live in the town where Meredith has a store and you wanted to be on the show, you probably have gone in. Like it's just a bizarre thing to lie about.
Yeah.
And then the way she has just slightly altered her stories about contacting production and mm-hmm. like production is showing receipts on it. It's like you're continuing to lie about some bizarro things that like don't need fabrication and it doesn't help you in any way.
Totally agree. Like, and so she did this interview with The Cut that was published the day after the reunion and mm-hmm. She claimed in the interview that the reason why she lied about going to Meredith's store is because production wanted it to look like it was her first time going to the store.
Why?
Which I'm like, but also like,
that doesn't make any sense.
I agree. It doesn't make any sense. And then the other thing that I noticed was like, you know, she said she started the account in March 2021. And so Andy was like, okay, it's been 3 years. And then she's like, no, it has not been 3 years. And he was like, okay, so it's been 2 years. And she was like, yeah. And then in this interview with The Cut, she was like, it was only 1 year. And I'm like, so we're now we're like, what is it? Has it been 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Like, it's just, and again, like these are details that might feel little, but if you're lying about little things, if you're fabricating smaller details, how am I supposed to believe your overarching narrative about this whole thing?
Completely. She's not... I want to trust her. I want to like her, but yeah, she just doesn't do, she sets herself up for failure with that stuff. Like,
completely agree.
Doesn't make sense to me. And I understand. And, you know, Bravo has been very kind to me and to you and to a lot of people in the podcasting space and in the social media space. Mm-hmm. Why would you ever, like, no matter your thoughts on maybe things with production that you don't agree with, why would you ever just like blatantly, like, and we're not employed by them, but like, why would you ever blatantly trash the person who's employing you to have a platform? Like, it's just, I don't understand her need to like drag production down, lie about production's involvement in Reality Von Teese. It's just a weird look, and it's certainly not going to keep you a job.
Yeah, totally. It's like, what do you expect? Like, if you're going to, and I guess the counter argument to that, which I think comparing these situations isn't totally, I don't think these two situations are totally equatable, but like a lot of people are talking about like, well, Heather lied to production and whatever about the black eye. But it's like, one, Andy held her accountable for that and she's owned up to it. And she's apologized mm-hmm. for it. And two, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's equatable at all.
I don't think it's equatable.
And I also don't think that she can be shocked that she doesn't have a job. Like, I'm sorry, like it's she's acting like she's being treated unfairly and all these things, but it's like, again, you just threw everybody under the bus. And yeah, I don't know what she expects. I really don't.
I'm not sure either. Part of me thinks this whole time, I didn't read that cut interview, I saw that, but part of me thinks this whole time she, during this reunion, she like knew she wasn't getting renewed, or knew, maybe that's why her attitude is the way it is.
Yeah, like, maybe. I kind of think the way that I read it is that like kind of midway through that third part when they were talking about the black eye and all the women were sort of like coming together over it and Whitney was hugging Heather and they were all getting emotional. That's when I noticed Monica's body language completely change and she kind of withdrew and she looked totally resigned. To me, that's the moment she actually threw in the towel. And that's why she didn't take Andy's opportunity at the end to like to have one last moment to say her final thoughts. Like she just totally denied that. So yeah, I don't, I think that she, I would love to have heard from her when she recognized the writing was on the wall.
Yeah. I'm feeling like we didn't actually get nearly as much information out of the whole situation, like as we would have wanted. In these reunions, they delivered on other levels for other things, but like, I don't think there's really closure on.
I felt that like I didn't love at the beginning of the Reality Von T segment how like they were like on their phones going through the profile trying to come up with examples of like when she talked shit. That stuff should have just been ready. You know what I mean? That those completely. Screenshots should have been there, ready, prepared to show us, because it was just kind of like a weird, like, oh wait, where are those examples? And it sounds like they were all it sounds like a lot of them were on the stories of the account, which means they obviously expired. And if they weren't added to the highlights, nobody can see them. And we just have to take Heather's word for it that they were sort of against all of them, and we have to take Monica's word for it that if they were there, they would have been part of the highlights. Because it's sort of like, if you think about it, they don't have screenshots of a lot of these things because they never thought they were going to have to like confront Reality Von T's on the show and bring receipts. You know what I mean? So it's like there was sort of a lack of evidence, which, like as you said, kind of, you know, prevented us from getting a lot of closure on it.
Completely. And the burn book was such a wash.
Oh my God.
I'm not even going to spend too much energy on that, but like she's not, as to my point earlier, she's just not delivering what a reunion needs to deliver. She's just, for someone who was such a breakout star of her season, she gets a D on the reunion for me on a grade level. She does. Yeah. She
no, the reunion thing. No. And like, I mean, the burn book was literally just like a mock up like of the Mean Girls burn book and then a printout of the entire Reality Von T's Instagram grid. Like, that's, what is that supposed to give us? Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Ugh. What could have been?
What could have been? But you know what? A++ season, truly.
Oh my God. No, we're nitpicking here.
We are. I think we shouldn't stop our SLC chat until we bring up one more thing. And that is, to the opposite of Monica, I thought Angie K surprised me with her presence at this reunion, and she delivered, really. And the back half of this season and this reunion, I am like an Angie K head. Whatever her fans are called, I am them.
No, totally. I think that Angie, the first half of this season, she was just kind of giving like, okay, I'm doing what I think Housewives should do. It was giving a little bit like thirsty. But then something shifted, and she sort of, I think, leaned into that caricature of herself, and she showed up in the moments that she should have shown up in, and she delivered, and it culminated in, like you said, this fantastic reunion performance where she didn't back down to Mary. She didn't back down to Monica. She didn't back down to Meredith. And to me, it totally solidified her place on this show as sort of like a, you know, a next level person beyond, you know, after the OGs. And I was super impressed. Like when she called Monica a lowbrow rat, and then Monica was like, a brown rat? And she was like, no, a lowbrow fucking rat. And then she like stood up from the couch. I was like, yeah, go defend yourself. Like it was, she held her own and then some. She really did.
I know, she can. It's funny. You don't think she has it in her to fight, and she like has it.
She's
a surprise to me, you know,
and right? I think she kind of learned it along the way. You know, I think maybe sometimes we're so quick to make judgments about the new additions, or like, you know, for, in her case, it was being upgraded from a friend to a full time. But you know, she's an example of somebody who you want to give a little bit of time to find her footing. And once you do, once she found her footing, she proved to be a really solid housewife. And I'm excited to see sort of her continue to step into that power position that she's created for herself next season.
Yeah, agreed. Wait, I realized we didn't talk about the black eye reveal at all. That was honestly the most riveting part of this whole reunion. Especially because I think this is a rare moment in this franchise, like of all the Housewives, where someone is taking like real true accountability and has been completely honest. The honesty was like kind of jarring almost. You're like, oh, Housewives aren't this honest.
No, I think
like,
that
she is, you know, like being completely transparent about the situation.
Yeah, she was. And she and Andy took her to task on it. And I thought it was a really well handled moment on both sides. You know, she was like, she essentially was like, I disrespected everybody involved, production, Andy, the cast, the audience, my family, this opportunity in general. And it was like, okay, Heather is owning her shit. And I completely adhere to the narrative that she has sort of stood by, which is like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, she would not have been able to own this. She would not have been able to stand up to Monica. She would not have been able to disavow Jen in the way that she has. She's done a lot of self-work on herself. I think because of this show, she has grown a lot and she has a lot more confidence. And, you know, I think for somebody whose Achilles heel has sort of been wanting to be liked and being a people pleaser, she has emerged from this season to me as sort of like the supreme of Salt Lake City. And she's earned it to me. I was so down on Heather at the end of last season with the black. I was so over the black eye. But she has more than redeemed herself and she has more than taken accountability. And I'm proud of her, honestly. I think it was a really great moment.
Same. She could have cowered and not been this good at being a housewife. And she stepped up to the occasion and brought it. She wins the season for me. And totally. I, like you, was down bad with her. I was like, I'm not team her anymore. I can't handle it.
Same. And the last thing I'll say about her is like she did such a great job in the finale and also sort of on the fly in this reunion of articulating, you know, her feelings and why they are all so turned off and mad about this entire situation. Like, you know, I think the point that she made basically of like the worst part about being a housewife, the hardest thing to deal with is the negativity and the trolling on social media, people picking apart your life. Obviously, there's an argument to be made about the fact that like part of that comes to the territory. You're opening your life on TV. People are watching and they want to talk about it. Obviously, that's part that comes to the territory. But her point was like, the reason why this is such a big deal for us is because there's always been a space between us and them, us and those trolls, us and that in that social media negativity. But with Monica permeating the show secretly, that gap was eliminated. There was a blurred line now. And that I saw her point, like that's a scary reality to be in of like, okay, where is the line if that space doesn't exist? And so I think her goal has been to sort of, you know, rebuild that space, because if you lean into Monica being on the show and the breach of that trust and that security, then like it's a slippery slope. And so I told that's the last thing I'll say about her, that I just loved that point that she made. And I think that kind of hammered it home for me in terms of why this entire thing is such a big deal to them.
Totally. I think I second everything you said. But I'm excited to see what's next for these ladies and kind of move on to a new chapter with them. I think it's smart when you, with Monica gone, the chapter on Reality Von Teese is like, it has to close. So the women are forced to move on to a new version of their show, which I think is important. On these shows, we're so obsessed with like, we're so contradictory about what we want. We're like, no, we want more out of this. But then we complain when all we're doing is rehashing the same stuff over and over again. It's like people can never kind of latch on to what it is they want. Like this,
we're very fickle.
Yeah, very fickle. Like in Beverly Hills, this is like four seasons worth of content, Reality Von Teese, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah, but, totally.
You know, and but like, I think it's smart that it's done.
Yeah, I think that it's smart that it's done. I think it's smart that they wrapped up the black eye. I think it's smart that, you know, I think Monica not coming back is going to enable them, to have that fresh start you just talked about, like Jen has been sort of a shadow looming over this show for 4 years now. She wasn't like directly part of this season, but I think they're washing their hands of her for good. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't even like say her name next season. You know, I think that to me should be the goal. What is a Real Housewives of Salt Lake City without any mention or involvement or a shadow of Jen Shah? Like it represents a fresh start for them, and I think that they should lean into that.
Agreed. And she loses, Jen Shah loses her power when you stop talking about her.
So exactly. Like if they don't say her name on the show, she has nothing to post on her Instagram story from prison. Come on.
I know. She can't have one of her 10 assistants that she still, I think, probably has from prison do posting and trolling
for her. Who must be unpaid. So
must be, yeah. Well, let's move on. I would love to touch on the reason for the season, which is the traitors.
Oh, yes. It's all I can think about. Outside of Salt Lake.
Same. I was just listening to Las Culturistas today, and Matt Rogers was talking about how he's like, all I think about when I wake up and when I go to sleep is the traitors. And I'm like, I honestly identify with that deeply. And the fact that we just don't have access to a couple more episodes. Like, I feel like an addict. I'm like, I need like just a couple more.
I know it's almost like you want them. I know it's like, we're at one a week, which I'm an advocate for the week to week drop, but
yes,
I almost wish they would give us like one on Tuesdays and one on Fridays, you know, like, sure. It's addicting. It's just sort of like, because we got the three up top, so we were used to sort of the the pace of that. But I think it's gonna make for, I mean, this season is just gonna build and build and build and build, and like the whatever the finale is gonna be, and then the reunion that Andy said he's gonna host. It's gonna make those moments like that much more fun, because there's gonna be so much excitement.
Yes, it totally is. Because it's appointment viewing. It's like absolutely water cooler television. Like everyone's watching it.
Which, oh my god! Yeah, it's so
amazing.
Fun.
I think it's such a bridge for people.
Yes, yeah, and I think it's actually made the social media like conversation around it that much more interesting, because it's sort of like we have Housewives legends, we have Survivor legends, we have Big Brother legends, and all those fandoms are coming together to root for their own legends, and they all think totally that their own sort of stars are like the best, and so it's created for this really fun dynamic, I think. And yeah, it's one of those shows where like it comes out, I think, at what, like 9 p.m. on Thursdays or something like that, and like if you don't watch it by the next morning at 9 a.m. like you're risking getting spoilers, because everyone is like that eager to talk about it.
Yes, I could not watch it last week at 9 p.m. So I watched it like Friday morning at 8 a.m. or like 7. I think I watched it at like 7 a.m. in the morning.
We're sick in the head. I did the same thing. We're sick in the head.
I was like, I cannot. I would love to watch this like Friday night with like my pizza and wine, but like I can't do that. Like I'm going to have to just watch it now, or someone's going to tell me what happens. So.
Oh my God. No. Oh my God. And yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I would say, I know you as a Bravo like aficionado, but like, do you have context for Survivor, Big Brother, The Challenge, Love Island?
I have watched every season of Survivor. I've watched every season of Big Brother.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah,
oh my God,
I don't.
The same.
Yeah, I don't talk about it as much online. Like, I'm not as ingrained in those communities, but
they scare me. So I think that's smart. Yes. Those communities scare me. And you can only be a part of so many scary communities. You're in the Bravo one.
Completely agree. I'm too in deep in Bravo. But I've loved Janelle for like 15 years. I've loved Parvati for 15 years.
Wow. Okay, Gibson, I feel so much more connected to you. Because I don't see your discourse about those shows, I was like, I think he may not watch them. But
I understand.
For these people.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah. So for you and me, who know, I would say most of these people, I'm having I don't know who to root for, is where I'm struggling. Like, I don't have, because Parvati and Sandra are truly like my North Stars of Survivor. I think Sandra, the way she has won the way she's won the two seasons she's played is masterful, because if you don't know and you've never watched her seasons, she, for people listening at home, I mean, she's I think she has never won an immunity idol or an immunity challenge. Like,
I think you're right.
She doesn't win. She doesn't win things, but she wins the game. Mm-hmm. And I think her being a faithful here is going to put her on a trajectory to being right there at the finale because she knows how to play a game from this place.
Right. And I think it's perfect that Parvati is a traitor and Sandra is a faithful because they both, nobody knows better than either of them how big of a mm-hmm. threat either each other are. And so it's sort of like a race to like, who can take the other out first, you know? Because they're totally. Kind of each other's biggest threats. And I totally agree. That dynamic is so interesting. And I think, you know, what I was loving, which I hope that this season doesn't lose. I hope because Larsa's not out. Let me restart. I think because Larsa got out, I'm a little bit worried that, like, the show is going to lose this element of, like, the housewives. Maybe it's not because Phaedra took it to Parvati.
I don't think so.
But Larsa was like coming for Janelle. She didn't like Parvati. Sandra was coming for Larsa. Like Larsa clearly didn't like the other strong women in the house, you know, that mm-hmm. I think she felt probably kind of threatened by their personalities and the air they were taking up in the room. So I think I'll miss Larsa in terms just even just for that element of it. But no, it's such a, the women are the stars of this season. And I think the social, I think it's underrated, the social gain that the housewives can bring to this. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Survivor and Big Brother ladies in particular are sort of underappreciating that and underestimating that.
I think Janelle is meeting them where they're at. I think she gets it.
Like, I think she gets it, but Parvati doesn't totally get that.
Yes, because also, Big Brother is different than Survivor.
Which you're right.
Survivor is different because the cameras are on you the whole time, but like in a different way. Like things are going to be removed. Like, and the gameplay is different on Big Brother. Mm-hmm. You are weekly live on television, having to like suss out like alliances and I feel like you have to be on your toes in the social game aspect much more in Big Brother definitely. Than you do in Survivor.
Definitely, because they're also, you're playing the social game while also knowing that like somebody has all the power 1 week. And so right. you have to like right. be in relatively good standing with as many people as possible. And there's this also element of like playing to the audience and the confessionals in Big Brother because
yes, very
everyone wants, because America votes on things. There's an America's Favorite Player at the end. So yeah, you're totally right. She's much more familiar with, or maybe on the same page as some of the housewives, and she would make a great housewife, honestly.
She would. And the game of Big Brother itself is significantly longer than Survivor.
Yes.
And I think she has a longer game plan than Parvati does, unfortunately. And I love Parvati, but I think she is trying to figure out how to survive in these moment-to-moment eliminations when Janelle is like aligning herself with the gamers, but also she's aligning herself with the housewives. Like I foresee her becoming close with housewives because of the fact that Tamara and her have started this like traitors podcast. I have a feeling that she's going to like be buddy buddy with some of the housewives and be buddy buddy with the gamers and try and get rid of the people that are the true threats, which are the sleeper hits. Like I think the Peters and the Kevins and things like that can go all the way to the end because like no one really cares about them.
Yeah, it's sort of
so
like,
I think she's going to direct people in the right direction there.
Yeah, my read of like the current situation on the traders right now is like, it's almost this like this sprint right now of like who can get the other big threats out right now and then control the rest of the game. So it's like, you know, Dan has sort of put Parvati and Phaedra against one another because he sort of planted the housewives seed of Parvati. So I think that, you know, either Parvati and Dan have to like really be united front and take Phaedra out, or Parvati recognizes what Dan is trying to do and takes him out and then teams up with Phaedra. And then I think that she would ultimately prevail over Phaedra. Or it's like, there's also the Sandra Parvati thing I talked about. There's the Janelle mm-hmm. aspect. So there's kind of like, it's kind of, I feel like the stakes are really high right now and they could drop in the next couple of weeks, depending on what happens and who gets banished and who gets murdered.
Yeah, it's I mean,
it's so exciting. I'm obsessed with it.
It is so exciting. And also something else I love is I love to see players like CT, who I also, yeah. I came to the challenge late. I watched the, I like binged like 20 seasons of the challenge, God, embarrassingly, during the pandemic. It was dark. It was a dark
I've actually never watched a full season of the challenge other than that new version they have with
the
on
new
CBS.
Version is. The new version is like fine, like it's fun, uh-huh. but the old versions are crazy because they are wasted constantly and they're like fighting, like physical fighting.
It's like early 2000s reality, right?
It is. And there's also, but then there's also the fact they'll like rip shots until 3 a.m., get in a fist fight, and then the next morning they're like jumping off a cliff. And you're like, okay, well, this is crazy.
I don't know how these people have it. I don't know how any of these people have it in them to like film these shows sometimes. I'm like, how do you do this? Even a Real Housewives cast trip, I'm like, how do you have the energy and the stamina? It's wild.
I know. It looks exhausting. Like, especially now that, you know, being in my 30s, I'm like, at the age of 33, you get one night on a weekend with me. You don't get more than, you don't get two.
Oh,
certainly
no, you don't
three.
Get two. You do not get two nights in a row. Absolutely not.
Not in a row. I could do a Friday night and then a Sunday brunch, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah, right. Right. Oh my God.
Like, I don't know how they're just raging all day and night. And then also in full glam looking gorge. I'm like, this is too much.
And I think that's what is one of the smart things about that, about Traitors, is like, you don't get the sense that they're like getting wasted. They're having like a couple glasses of wine maybe at night, but then they're like, okay, time to go to bed. You know, they're all pretty fresh in the morning. Their brains are all functioning the way that they should be functioning on this show. And I think it's like almost too much, actually, because they're all, one of the funny parts about the Traitors is like, they're all wrong all the time. They're all like
constantly.
It's like the clues they're reading into. It's like, oh, you smiled when I said that, or you cheered at the wrong time, or you reacted really weirdly to my vote last night. Like, they're all reading into these things in the complete wrong way, which is, it has to be humbling for them, which I kind of love.
Yeah, and I do too. And then it's funny, the more unlikely players are the ones that suss out the Traitors so early, and then they often get eliminated. Like last season, Brandy sussed out that Cody was a traitor like episode one or two or something, like right in the beginning.
Yes.
And no one listened to her and
so true.
Instead made it look like she was a threat. Larsa literally called Dan out on episode two of this season, and everyone was like, girl, you are crazy, and kicked her out. And then MJ has Dan clocked completely, and I pray that she stays with us, because I think she could be a really great game player here.
I totally agree. She's kind of my dark horse, and they need to get back. They need to get back on the Dan train. They do. Like, it's, they were right there, and then somehow he squirmed his way out from that spotlight. But I need MJ to bring it back on him, because they were onto it, and I would be like, it would be such rewarding television to watch them vote him out.
And okay, so a lot of people who don't watch Big Brother, I've seen online or like podcasts I listen to, being like, Dan, I don't get it. Like, I don't get the like appeal of him, because those that do watch Big Brother, I mean, he is male player. He's my favorite male player, I would say, ever play the game. Like, I just think what he did in, what was that season?
A long time ago.
10?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was crazy. So, everyone, if you've not watched Dan's season of Big Brother, you don't necessarily need to go watch it, because to binge Big Brother is the whole thing, because you got to watch, I think, like 50 episodes a season. So
yeah,
I don't think
lot.
You need to do that. But go look up Dan's funeral. It's from his second season that he was on. And what happens is he gets put up on the block in the Big Brother house and hatches a plan to keep him safe. And when he goes up on the block, it's like putting up someone that's an insane threat. Like, he's an obvious, like, okay, well, this is his time. And he throws a funeral for himself where he single-handedly like flips the whole house upside down. Like, people are sobbing. He's like coming for people, and his plan works. And I can't remember who goes home, but he doesn't go home, and he goes all the way to the final two, essentially because of his move there. And so I think that my point here back to Traitors is that similar to Sandra, I think he can work in like the bottom space better. Like, I think he can figure out a way to get out of a bad spot more than, you know, maybe Parvati could. Like, I think he sees that he's down bad with these people. Like, he does. People are sussing him out. And I think this is where Dan can really shine if he chooses to shine, because he's done it in the past.
Yeah, I mean, he squirmed his way out of Larsa and MJ pointing the finger at him. Like, I feel like I feel like people were going to vote for him that night, at least the way it was edited.
Totally.
I think you're totally right. And I think that Harvey, you know, is more of a leader than Dan is. I think Dan sort of operates. He's kind of more like his own operator.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. I think like Parvati is the one who, like, on Survivor, she corralled all the women to get this guy, to get what's his face, Eric, I think was his name or something, to give up his immunity to the idol. And then they voted him out. Like, she led that entire mission and kind of, like, you know, cultivated this movement. And they operate in different, they're both great at their games, but they operate in very different ways. So again, I think it's going to be really interesting to see whether they actually end up teaming up in the long run as traitors, mm-hmm. or if they recognize what the reality is, which is like, they're both the biggest threats to win the game. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm perched. I'm watching. I'm obsessed.
Obsessed. And for reference material, if you're like, okay, I don't know who Parvati is, like, I want to get why people love her, watch Survivor Micronesia. Yes. I don't know what season that is, but if you just Google it, it'll pop up. And it will tell you everything you need to know about why she's an insane game player. So mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's also crazy. Just like, honestly, a YouTube compilation from that season that shows you, because I'm telling you that this tribal council where she convinced this guy to give up his immunity idol to save somebody, and then they just vote him out. It was
it's crazy.
One of the most iconic reality TV moments I've ever seen, truly.
And also, if you do go watch Micronesia, Ceri is on Micronesia. That's also that's her second season on as well, and she is amazing on it. So
totally.
Anything else? What are there? I admittedly am behind on Potomac because it's been a slog. I'm not watching, but Miami, I'm loving. Is there anything else Bravo related that you're obsessed with?
I love Miami. I thought the season of Southern Charm was its best in years.
Southern Charm,
I thought,
was
I'm not loving the season of Potomac, but I do think the past couple episodes have been a slight righting of the ship. You know, I think they've been a little bit more easy. They've been a little bit more fun and engaging to watch. But yeah, I think I agree. Miami's having a great season. I think it's unfortunate that it's being a little bit overshadowed just kind of naturally because of everything that's going on in Salt Lake, and Beverly Hills is the most watched Housewives franchise. So it's naturally being overshadowed. But it's unfortunate because they're having such a great season.
Agreed. Southern Charm, though, the second or third part of the reunion was last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really, I was talking to a friend about it, and shout out Allison. She leads listeners to the pod. And it's crazy. I have mixed feelings on the Olivia Taylor of it all. Mm-hmm. And then I also have so much sadness for Shep. It's like really hard to watch. And I just want him to be in a better spot, you know? And it's hard to see him with this group skirting around his issues with alcohol. It's like, mm-hmm. it's just tough. It's tough. And yet he has such a kind heart in him somewhere that I want him to lean into that and find some peace and get better, and maybe that's not on our television screens.
I know. It's this push and pull with him of like, I don't think he's a bad person, but he does bad things and he doesn't treat people well. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, I think Taylor's been very much villainized on this show, and I do think she has a lot of blame in the whole situation, but I also think that she is completely lost as a human being right now. And yeah. It's tough not to have a little bit of, you know, empathy for that.
I think I wish Olivia would step back a little bit and be like, she is not worth this vitriol. Like, Austin also should be getting shit too. And I don't think he ever gets enough shit for what he
does. I know. That's definitely true. Austin has a way of not taking a full blame even when he should be. I just think that I agree about Olivia, but I also think that Taylor, I guess similarly to how like we talked about Monica earlier, is like Taylor just she has kind of dropped the ball every time that she's had the opportunity
Completely.
to make it right, or at least like have a moment where she kind of gets some redemption. She's never, and I think that speaks to again what I said earlier of like her just kind of being a little bit lost, but like she just has never gotten she's never gotten the moment right as it pertains to this situation with Austin and Olivia. And so it's like I feel so bad for her, but also I'm like, she's doing herself no favors.
No, no favors. And I really think what she did when she like brought up Olivia's brother when they were on
Oof.
vacation was like deeply unforgivable.
Deeply
Like, I.
unforgivable. And then she pulled the stunt with the Thomas Ravenel detail about Olivia
So
after the
fucked
first
up.
part. And it's like those two things, it's like, okay, but like you, how are we gonna fully forgive you if you're doing these things? It's tough.
It's, yeah, it's hard to root for her.
It is.
And you,
It is.
and. And this is going to be mean, so I'm going to just say it's going to be mean. Everyone, grab onto something. But I don't know that Taylor is like made for prime time. Like, I don't think she's like meant to be a villain. I don't think she's meant to be a hero. I don't think she's meant for reality TV. And because I just think she caves and then gets so mean, but it's not clever. It's not, it's just weird. I'm like, I just don't think this is the right medium for her. And like, I don't like how she's like behaved on this season. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that she dated into this. You know, she was dating
Totally.
Shep,
But I know, but when people
and
date in, when people date into this, you're like, did you just happen to date into this, or did you date into this like on purpose? You know, and I'm not
right.
saying
No,
she did that on purpose, but you knew who you
that's
were
also
dating.
valid. Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's one of those things where it's like she didn't know exactly what it would entail, and maybe she kind of she obviously saw Shep as endgame, and so she always thought she would have Shep as this sort of like floating device to kind of bring her through this situation. And now that she doesn't have that, she doesn't have anybody leading her. She thought she had Austin leading her. I think that's why she leaned on him and they made out. Turns out he's not dependable, neither of those men are. So she's kind of left kind of just like floating there without an anchor, without anybody to like guide her. And I agree, she's not I don't think she's naturally built for this experience. Maybe similarly to how Raquel was not built for this. And
I agree. I
you know,
agree.
it's that similar sort of, there's a little bit of naivety, there's a little bit of an innocence factor, that I just don't know. I don't know. I agree that she, if she was built for this, she would have stepped into the villain role a little bit more, I think. Whereas like
Completely.
Olivia stepped into her power this season and she became a total star to me. So,
I completely agree.
yeah.
Because you know what, Gibson, I actually remember, I thought about you the other day because I. You had Olivia on your podcast like in her f last
Her
year
first
for her
season.
first season, and I DM'd you and was like, I don't get it. Like, I can feel that you
Oh
like
my
her, and I
God,
just
did
don't
you?
get it. And
Yeah.
you were like, I think you're underestimating her like star quality. And I was like, okay, Gibson, I'll just trust you on that. And I should have trusted you in the moment because I
Oh my
agree that
God, ahead of my
she.
time.
You were like, no, I think she's a fresh face here that actually makes sense, and it. Is willing to take some people to task, but kind of authentically fits into the group. And you know, I agree. I like her.
Yeah, I really like her, and I think that not having Catherine around was really good for her this season. I thought it was obviously really heartbreaking what happened with her brother, but I think the way that she like sort of was an open book and didn't shy away from showing her emotion around that was really powerful. And then I
Yep.
think the way that she leaned into the Austin and Taylor thing and really stepped up and like made some moments out of it. I think she's become a really good reality star this season when the pressure got hot and she took it and ran with it.
Agreed. I completely agree. You know, I think the lesson for today is if you're going to be a villain, you got to step into
Absolutely. That's
it. We took
always the
that away
lesson.
from Monica. We took that away from the traitors. We took that away from
Southern Charm.
Taylor. Yeah, Southern Charm. Well, Gibson, thank you so much for being here. This is a blast. I love
So
catching up with
fun.
you because you and I can probably do this for another hour and still
Oh
have
my
a lot of
God.
time to
Beyond.
talk.
Yeah, I think
Beyond.
we think similarly about these shows.
We do. Let everyone know where they can follow you, listen to the podcast, all the good stuff.
Yeah. So
any exciting guests you have coming on soon?
Yeah. So I host a podcast called Gabbing with Gib on Tuesdays. I generally have interviews a lot of the time with Bravo people. So this week was Alexia and Dr. Nicole and two separate interviews. And then on Fridays, I have an episode that's more like this, which is just like sort of a discussion around a pop culture topic. A lot of the time it's Bravo related. So go subscribe wherever you are listening to this great podcast. And then you can follow me at Gibsonoma, G-I-B-S-O-N-O-M-A on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the things.
Yes, do subscribe to all the things, because Gibson is a fantastic interviewer and has great gets on the pod. So definitely check him out. And Gibson, thank you for being here. Say bye to the listeners.
Of course. Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
That's another ep in the books. Make sure to follow me at Tom Hamlet on Instagram. And you can follow Kix
at Kix Hamlet, that's spelled C-I-X. And make sure to follow the pod on IG at Dumpster Dive Pod, and on TikTok at Two Dumpster Divas.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us and all the pods you love on your favorite app of choice. And we will see y'all soon.
Bye. Bye.